Became disabled through acquiring a virus which was never identified. From a normal day's work, I came home and literally overnight became paralyzed because I was on a life support machine, and for 2 months I literally moved no muscles at all, and there was no flicker of movement. And from that I gradually learned to do without the life support machine. I relearned, would you believe, how to breathe. And I went to a stage, and this is rather important, that we all set targets for ourselves. And my target for several months, I would have been satisfied to live the rest of my life capable of breathing.
That's a sobering thought. Most of us take for granted not only being able to breathe, but also being fit and able-bodied. We feel it can never happen to us. Pat Saunders, who told us there how he became disabled, is just one of the several million people in Britain in the same position. As medical science improves, life expectancy increases. It's estimated that the risk of a person aged between 20 to 25 becoming disabled in some way is about 65%, so that could mean you. In this two-part Vitra special report on the disabled, we'll be looking this week at how some people have managed to cope with disability, and at some of the activities that are possible and help that's available. Because of the very wide range of disabilities, we have not been able to include them all here. The mentally handicapped are not covered, simply because to do justice to the activities organised for them and the problems involved would need a programme in itself. Let's start, though, with an optimistic look at what can be achieved in spite of disabilities. Pat Saunders has some ideas, as he explained.
I went the other day to a place where I met a whole group of disabled people, and it crossed my mind that because I'd been introduced to three or four young people, that there was scope for the provision of a weekly radio program for the disabled, and how nice it would be if this program could be run by young people who frequently these days have the technical knowledge to put together such a program. And so it would both provide a good activity for a number of young creative people, at the same time as providing a point of contact weekly for disabled people.
So, who were these young people with technical knowledge? I went up to Lee Court, near Lys, to meet them myself. Lee Court is a residential home for the severely disabled, and Nigel McKenzie, one of the residents, told me the background.
This is the original Cheshire home, and it is also the biggest Cheshire home in Great Britain.
How many people are there here?
The 54 residents.
Yeah. And how is the whole thing organised?
The home is run by the residents for the residents, and the beds are contracted out either to the area health authority or to the local council. They pay for each resident to be there, and the other money for the, well, like other sundries, like lighting, heating, is funded by private donations, public subscriptions, and that sort of thing.
And perhaps you could describe a typical day at the home. I mean, is there a lot of regimentation, or is it very...
There's no regimentation or regulations here, because it is our home. We know where every last penny is spent because we make these decisions.
It is indeed a remarkable place, not least because they've actually got a recording studio up there where some of the residents produce their own programmes. Peter Corshay is one of them, and he told me how it began.
Group Captain Cheshire came to see me one day. He'd heard about my interest in journalism and technical things, and he came along and he asked me if I'd like to run the sound library. The purpose of it was to loan tapes of recorded material which had been recorded by Group Captain Cheshire and his wife Sue Ryder in their many, many visits abroad. The idea was merely to help to publicise the work of the Cheshire Foundation at home and abroad. And having looked at the records, we saw, in fact, that the tapes weren't being loaned very much. Anyway, we decided to use the studio or the Sound Library's facilities to produce a talking magazine for the Cheshire Foundation, known as the Cheshire Voice. And after that, we have been involved in various publicity things to do with the studio.
Peter, I believe you do some at the Portsmouth Hospital Radio as well. How did that come about?
I did my first programme at the same time as Nigel started doing a secondary kind of programme. That was, what, 3 years ago now.
Yes.
I've been doing sort of live broadcasting at PHB for 2 years.
Now, how does that work? Because obviously there are problems with sort of disablement. How do you find that you can manage with the whole thing?
Well, of course, the transport is the first difficulty, but as this home has a residence car, which we can hire, providing that we have a driver, and we have such things as mobility allowance, we're able to travel fairly well, and that's no great difficulty to me. All I need to do is to take an escort and a driver with me, and the people at PHB are quite prepared to accept me as one of the team now. Mind you, I had to fight for this.
I was going to ask you about that acceptance and attitude from them.
That's right, yeah. They now accept me as just one of the lunchtime team.
And that's the way you want it?
That's the way I want it.
Yeah. Tad, we'll come back to you as an engineer. Tell me a bit of the history of this recording studio. How did you start?
Sure. Well, first of all, we started doing recordings for the sort of recorded music shows for PHB with Peter and Nigel, in my own room, which was then a double room. And of course we get all the problems with a communal building like this, people walking up and down in the corridor outside, or coming in, so knocking on the door when we least wanted them to. And occasionally we got somebody sort of running down the corridor whistling away and shouting to somebody, to all these extraneous noises.
What kind of equipment did you have at the time in there?
Very, very basic. Just one Japanese tape recorder, open reel machine, you see, and a cheap mixer, cheap four-channel mixer, and a couple of rather cheap and nasty microphones for, and that was all. We used my cassette recorder and some of my own personal hi-fi equipment as well to help out. Then we decided we needed better premises, something exclusively for recording. At the moment, well, we've got some panelling on the walls, acoustic tiling on the walls, standing away from the walls some 2 inches or so, and the room's been split into two, see. The partition in between, see, on one side of the partition we have the studio proper, which is somewhat 6 foot by 8, so pretty small, but enough to get about 4 or 5 people in there at one time, standing up, and the other side is the control room, which is designed very much like an aircraft cockpit, you see, with equipment crammed one on top of another.
And it works okay, does it?
Oh, it works fine now, yes, but it didn't originally.
Oh,
when
right.
We first switched on, terrific shock. We got all sorts of radio breakthrough, and so we got Radio Bratislava breaking through from one speaker and Radio Warsaw from the other.
Why?
Hum and so on. Well, mainly because of the bad wiring and cabling and so on, because we were so anxious to move in, you see. I sort of threw the equipment together at the last minute. Switched on, got a terrific shock out of it.
Have you got it sorted out now?
Yes, after a long time, finally got it sorted out, and it is working. I did spend quite a lot of time there. Radio Victory did give us a lot of advice and help right from the very beginning. See, otherwise, the whole thing may not have been possible. I don't know if I could have managed on my own. Paul Robbins, one of their engineers, came up and he sort of advised me where to, you know, how to cable, how to run the cabling, cut out Radio Bratislava, that sort of thing. Yes. As well as wiring out some plugs and things for us, which I would have found difficult.
What impressed me most about the setup at Lee Court was the way people were able to lead such full and active lives in spite of their disabilities. Nigel McKenzie summed it all up when he told me how he came to be there.
I am a journalist. I was working in Salisbury and I got multiple sclerosis and went into hospital, and I had to give up my job and I was living at home. I came over here and settled in fairly quickly, and I did the right thing, because through living at Lee Court and through moving away from my family, I've grown close to my family, because I've found that they have been able to live their life more fully since seeing me settled, and I've been able to live my life more fully because being here, I've got my independence, and being disabled, being independent, independence is the key word.
A desire for independence and the ability to lead a fully integrated life within the community was what characterised all the disabled people I talked to. Some of them take it to extremes. Listen to what Pat Saunders does.
I was told only last week by a very eminent man that I was now achieving more than I used to when I was able-bodied, would you believe? And now my entire week is taken up with work of one kind or another involved with the disabled. I get many letters, at least half a dozen letters a day, which doesn't sound much when you say six, but you try and answer 40 letters a week and it gets to quite a load. I am chairman of the Hamilton District Sports Association for the Disabled, and this is quite a big enterprise because we provide sport in seven or eight different external fields, ranging from riding through canoeing and sailing and archery, small ball shooting. All these are at different venues according to what the sport is. And indoor sport once a week with things like wheelchair basketball and badminton, table tennis.
The Haven't Sports for the Disabled, HADSAD, held a grand opening not so long ago, and I asked Pat if there was anything that evening that particularly summed up what they were trying to achieve.
The time during the evening when I went into the sports hall and there were some 40 or 50 disabled sportsmen playing different kinds of sport, from wheelchair basketball to badminton, including a boy of nine who was giving a very good account of himself fencing with an able-bodied adult fencer.
Sport is certainly an area of activity where disabled people can and do enjoy themselves tremendously. The Endeavour Swimming Club organises sessions for the disabled every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 7:30 at Havant Swimming Pool. I went along one Thursday to see what it was like, and started off by asking Malcolm why he was there.
Well, I have multiple sclerosis, which unfortunately has made me have a lack of mobility, and it's also adversely affecting my vision. So obviously if I swim into people here, they don't mind so much, rather than if I were in a public swimming bath, you know, they'd be thinking, particularly if they were young ladies, that I was up to no good, you know.
And I see you've come with your family here.
Yeah, I bring my wife, well, at least she brings me, and she has to drive, I'm afraid, and my young nephew, we try to teach him how to swim. He seems to be getting on quite well with it, anyway.
And you all go into the water together?
We do,
yeah. And what do you particularly like about the sessions?
Well, I used to be a very active person, very well into sports. I used to play rugby, etc., and I can't move around quite so well as I used to, and it helps me get a lot of exercise, you know. I flash about the pool here like a mad thing. My wife keeps telling me off about it, but just the general exercise does me an awful lot of good. I feel really fit on a Friday anyway.
Mrs. Daphne Burke, the organiser, explains the thinking behind the way the sessions are run.
We encourage them to bring their families. We like the family atmosphere. We find we have a number of young children come along with their parents, and they all enjoy this together, because obviously the more we can integrate disabled people into communities, the happier they are and the more natural the situation is.
Chris, what do you get out of these sessions?
Exercise mainly, really, you know, much more fitter than I used to be. And main thing actually is friendship. You know, you get a great bunch of guys and girls coming here, and it's really enjoyable. And basically, after the swim, you feel refreshed, more and more alive. Then you go and have a cup of coffee, you know, chat up a few girls and the blokes, make a few friends more. And that's basically all it is, you know, really friendship and a good time.
James, let me introduce you to Sarah, who's our number one water baby. You have to be careful, because if you want to talk to her, you might be talking to her feet. Every time you say hello to her, she goes and stands on her head. This is Sarah.
Can you swim?
Yeah.
Can you go
under the water. Yes. Do you like that?
I like going under the water.
Yes. How long can you hold your breath?
15 seconds.
Mm. Jenny, what is your disability?
I've got one leg.
And how do you find swimming help?
Well, it's very enjoyable. And, you know, you can get rid of all of your energy swimming. And you can't in the same running. You can't go for a good run and get rid of some energy and get rid of all your tension.
You can swim okay?
Yes, I'm not a very good swimmer, but that's because I don't practice very much.
And do you come on your own?
No, I bring my two little girls.
Oh, how old are they?
4 and 2.5.
And you all swim together?
Yes, and they love it, isn't it? It's lovely and warm.
Dan, you're the head pool attendant, aren't you? What are the special things you have to watch out for in this session?
Well, making sure that the wheelchairs don't fall into the pool and that they're clean, that the people are managing okay by themselves or with their helpers.
Do any of them ever ask for instructions?
Occasionally, but, you know, we help them out with tests and anything that they need assistance with.
But really, it's just if they want it.
Yes. It's up to them to ask, really. Although, you know, if they want to help, and they look as if they want help, we're always keen to help them.
Because disabled people can come with their families to these sessions, there is a terrific atmosphere of fairly boisterous enjoyment. I found the same thing at the Stud Club, which also runs on Thursday evenings from 7 to 9.30 at St Nicholas Church Hall, Battenberg Avenue, North End, Portsmouth. FAB stands for Physically Handicapped and Able-Bodied, and it's a youth club for 11 to 22-year-olds, some of whom just happen to be disabled. Judith Simons is a youth leader there, and I asked her what it was like.
Not very different from working in an ordinary youth club. The young people still have the same needs for entertainment and something to do, but they are not very willing to do any of the things that you offer them to do, as always. However, you can get round this, and I do find that some activities you can get the handicapped and the able body to combine quite well.
What sort of things are they best at together?
Things like darts and things like this that they can play on relatively equal terms if you make the able body sit down or something.
How about football? I noticed some of them are playing football.
Yes, some of them. Well, the handicapped who want to play football do, and the able body take account of the fact they are handicapped, and it seems to work quite well, enjoyed by all.
And what actually is your role? What sort of things do you do?
I'm here primarily to organise the activities on a Thursday evening to make sure there are things to do and people to supervise them being done.
But basically it's fairly free, well not free for all, but it's fairly...
It's very informal, yes. Nobody has to do anything, yes. Largely. If you want to do it, do it. If you don't want to do it, be persuaded to do it.
Noise is off there from the football match in the main hall. Sammy has spina bifida, and she's a regular member of the SAD club. I asked her who her friends were.
My cousin comes, and her friend.
Yeah.
And my friend from school comes.
So, and you all come every week?
Yes.
And you like sort of mixing in with everyone,
yes,
and all that. What do you think of all this football and this banging around? Does it bother you?
No, I don't usually hear we match because we've got the speckles on in the other room, and we don't hear it much.
So that you let them get on with it?
Yeah.
So you listen to records and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But anything else to do?
Lately we've had the darts competition.
Have you taken part in that?
Yes.
How'd you do?
I lost.
Dean has muscular dystrophy and Ian spina bifida. They both come to the club regularly. Wheelchair bound, they are inseparable. They also make a formidable team, as I found out when I asked them what they did.
Oh, you see,
chat and so on.
What do you talk about then?
Well, all sorts of things.
I'm not prepared to say it.
Yeah, we're saying all sorts of things, but we won't say what.
Oh, all right, let's leave it at that.
Jimmy, who's a midget, explained to me why he liked the club.
I like it because it's handicap more, and there's a lot more I can do than in other places.
And you find that you get on time with everyone?
Yeah.
Some of the members of the FAB club talking there. Incidentally, they organise camping trips and are trying to raise enough money to buy their own tents, so any donations would be gratefully received. The ability to compete on equal terms, so successful in the darts competition at the Fab Club, is equally possible in some activities for the blind, as Mr. Wintle, Secretary of the Voluntary Association for the Blind, explains.
The games mainly are whist, crib, dominoes and draughts. And in the case of the cards, for instance, they have raised dots in the corners to enable the blind people to identify. The same thing happens with the dominoes. You've got dots on those which are readily felt by the blind folk, so that there's no difficulty. In fact, blind people and sighted people in competition very often found that the blind people give the sighted people a good hiding.
As Mr. Wintle told me, the Voluntary Association for the Blind both acts as a liaising body and can provide quite a lot of financial assistance in their own right.
The position at the moment is that on behalf of the Hampshire County Council, we are issuing radio sets, braille watches and clocks, various appliances, white sticks, writing frames, braille and moon instruction books, and apparatus and games. There are quite a number of these special items to which I could refer. As far as our own direct services are concerned, they include, as I've already said, some visiting, the games and social meetings, and of course we make money grants. Blind people, in common with everyone else, like to have a holiday. Many of them, on supplementary benefit, can't afford the full amount which is required, and we subsidise. We feel sometimes that not as many people as we would like take advantage of this facility. We would like to hear from them. If they want a holiday and they want a little bit of financial help, apply to us and we'll see what we can do to help them.
And the address to write to there is 48 Stubbington Avenue, North End, or phone Portsmouth 61717. When we look at the various activities for the disabled, it is extraordinary how much is done by voluntary associations. John Kettle, community welfare worker for the deaf, runs the Deaf Club in Havant, and he feels that maybe the local authority there aren't pulling their weight.
We get a little bit of help towards paying the rent from the Southampton Deaf Association, but everything else is contributed voluntary by, you know, we've got to go around with a begging bowl. We do own a deaf minibus, which is owned by the club. I think the general idea in the Havant Borough area, as far as I've come against anyway, is that deaf people do not exist.
And how many deaf people are actually coming to your club, and how many do you know about?
We have an approximate membership of about 50 members. These are profoundly deaf people. Quite a lot of them are deaf without voice. The old title for them used to be deaf mute, but they've dropped the title. We have quite a lot of elderly, hard of hearing people. Obviously, the numbers fluctuate from time to time. I think if they got them all in the club at the same time, we'd be, you know, like sardines.
And the Havant Deaf Club is every Wednesday evening at 7:30 at Focus 230, 230 Dunsby Way, Lee Park, and it's a voluntary organisation. So what then do local authorities offer in the way of help for the disabled? Who better to ask than Mr. Humphreys, who's the Divisional Director of South East Hampshire Social Services?
Well, we try to help people to manage their day-to-day lifestyle with things like social work advice and support, our specialist occupational therapists, Meals on Wheels, home helps, aids and adaptations to a person's home, installation of a telephone in certain approved cases, disabled person car badges for drivers or other families. We have day centres, we have hostels, training centres, workshops. We even have a special care unit within our day nurses for handicapped children who are under the age of 5. We have specialist mobility training officers for the blind and specialist workers with the deaf. But the main point I want to come back to is the fact that this is a partnership, and in particular, it's a partnership with the voluntary organisations. We often provide many of our services through a voluntary organisation and give it professional and financial support.
Quite a list there of facilities to which disabled people are entitled from social services. Of course, to take advantage of them, you have to be registered as disabled. Again, something social services deals with.
Now, if anybody is listening to this programme and just possibly has slipped through the net and isn't registered but would like to be, what's the best way for them to do it?
The simplest way is for anybody who is handicapped and who, on the basis of what they hear on these programmes, believes that maybe they're entitled to some service which they're not getting. If they write to the Divisional Director of Social Services, Lombard Street, Portsmouth, I will see that this gets to the right quarter.
So there we are. In this week's special report on the disabled, we've had the good news, how some people have coped, and what activities and help is available. Next week, the bad news, we'll be looking at some of the enormous problems that still face the disabled person who wants to live within the community. So stay tuned for next week's Victory Special Report.